Hello, this is Mark Peacock, and welcome to the Travel Commons Podcast. This is Travel Commons Podcast number 117, recorded Sunday, October 11th, 2015. This is the podcast giving the voice of the traveler. It's more about the journey than the destination. It's a pretty stream-of-consciousness episode with semi-strung-together observations from my trip to Scotland and about car rentals. So coming to you from the Travel Commons studio outside of Chicago, Illinois, I was actually trying to do this from the Bally's Casino in Las Vegas, where I was earlier this week, but it just didn't work out. I was there for business, not pleasure. But, you know, I always feel that I should stay in a casino hotel when I'm in Vegas. Staying in a Westin or a Marriott up by the convention center, I don't know, it just doesn't feel like Vegas. When I was here last year for a business convention, I stayed at the MGM Grand. And years ago, though, when I'd do regular booth duty at technology shows, I would always stay at the Mandalay Bay a little bit further south, which I really liked. You know, the more you know about hotels, the more you just got to be impressed by Vegas hotel operations. I mean, Caesars, the MGM Grand, Mandalay Bay, they're huge mini cities, so, you know, sort of orders of magnitude bigger than, say, the couple of hundred room hotels that I'd stay in Denver or New Orleans. And yet the service, the execution is almost always way better than those smaller hotels. I mean, if you're any sort of an operations nerd, you just got to give them a nod, though. On the other hand, when you head to the gym at 6 a.m. and pass by the old guy dragging on a cigarette playing the quarter slots, I don't know, it kind of makes you wish they were a little less good in some things. As I mentioned in the last episode, the most recent big travel for me was at the beginning of September when we were in Scotland for 2 weeks getting my daughter situated at University of St. Andrews. Now, when I say getting my daughter situated, there were equal parts getting my wife situated with the idea of her youngest child being an ocean away. It's a big difference from when my son was 90 minutes up the road in Milwaukee. The following week's travel, it's sort of a nice difficulty factor. Wednesday morning, I flew from Chicago to Washington, D.C. for the Papal Mass at the campus of my alma mater, Catholic University of America, and then flew back to Detroit that evening for meetings, you know, first thing Thursday morning. The difficulty factor here was my luggage. You know, no backpacks, no selfie sticks, and certainly no roller bags were getting through the security checkpoints. And finding a checked luggage place has really become a challenge anymore. I thought about checking my bag into my DC to Detroit flight, but I was too early. It was the maximum time ahead of time I could check my bag in was 8 hours. Now, there is a checked baggage place at Union Station, D.C.'s train station, which, as it turns out, is conveniently located a couple of stops south of Catholic University on the Metro Red Line. So, freed of my baggage, I emerged from the Brooklyn Metro stop to an unbelievable combination of people and fencing. Incredibly long lines of people corralled in by what had to be miles of fence. I was lucky. I somehow got into a quick security line, only 45 minutes. And after finding my seating section, the gates were closed and we were sealed into our sections until the Pope arrived and kind of did a couple of laps around campus in the Pope Mobile. Now, after Mass started, then they opened the gates again, kind of let us out our little section, which was great because while the music and the liturgy were really top-notch, I just wasn't queuing up for communion with 25,000 other folks. So after the homily, I was one of the trickle of folks making a early exit to beat the rush. I had a flight to catch. I'm sure the Pope understood. When you don't know where you're going, following up, Look, this is just a warning here that this section is going to ramble on for a while. You know, back to my comment at the top of the show about just sort of random observations. I really do. I have a random walk of comments, opinions that I just can't seem to synthesize into coherent topics. So here it goes. So the first stop is in the mailbag. I was pleasantly surprised to receive this audio comment from Linda Martin of the Indie Travel Podcast.
Hi, Mark. Linda here from Indie Travel Podcast. I just wanted to say thanks heaps for the most recent episode of Travel Commons, because it came out just in time for a long bus trip that I was doing, and I really only listen to podcasts when I'm traveling. In your last episode, you were talking about the best breakfast and the best eggs, and it reminded me of a trip I did to Weitra, Austria recently. The hotel we were staying had breakfast provided, but not only was breakfast provided, but the waitress would come over every morning and ask if you wanted an egg and how you'd like it, and then go away and make it fresh. So I always had the best scrambled eggs. It was so good. You're also talking about Spiritair, and it sounds like their pricing structure is quite similar to Wizz Air here in Europe. You can carry on a bag for free, but only a small briefcase. And if you want to carry a regular size carry-on bag, you have to pay extra. And I mean, it's a bit frustrating because when you're looking on Skyscanner or some other flight aggregator, you have to bear in mind that you've got these extra charges. But if you have it in mind, then it's not too bad, and they're pretty cheap. Well, that's all. Travel well.
Linda, thanks for that. The thing with eggs, and you can tell I've thought about this way too much, it's a trade-off between good eggs and time. I mean, it takes time for a cooked-to-order egg, but in the morning, I don't often have that time. Usually, I've worked out. I'm cooling down during breakfast, then hitting the shower and off to work. Now, when I stayed in one of the Renaissance hotels in New Orleans, they didn't have sort of a separate concierge lounge. Breakfast was served in the restaurant. They had the typical lounge breakfast set up, but you could also order off the menu, which I think I did once in a dozen stays. It turned out it was a very nice egg, but it took an extra 10 minutes that usually wasn't in my morning schedule. Now, I will admit, this is definitely a first world problem. Linda Walls wrote on the Travel Commons Facebook timeline. She said, "Hey, Mark, I love your podcast, especially the comments on food and craft beer. Other than Altoids, do you carry any food in your briefcase, such as protein bars? I'm always looking for something that is shelf stable, that tastes good and travels well." Hey, Lisa, thanks for the note. Actually, I usually keep 1 to 2 Kind bars in the bottom of my bag, K-I-N-D. And you can usually pick them up in any airport. The fruit and nut ones seem to hold up to sort of weeks of getting crushed by my PC power supply in the bottom of my backpack. They're also not too sweet the way that some other granola and power bars are. So let me go then one step further, and I know I'm going to lose sort of any foodie cred that I've built up over the years of this podcast, but I got to say that for me, the McDonald's grilled chicken snack wraps are just about the right amount of food to cover me for a 2-hour flight. They're quick to buy. There's usually a McDonald's in every airport, and they're compact to bring on board and eat. And this is important in these days of packed flights. I find it tough to manage a salad while sitting in the center seat. Now, I'm not sure if I mentioned this in the last episode, but this week's trip, I flew Southwest, you know, Vegas to Denver to Chicago, because I was going to get me to click over into A-list status, which is kind of the first level of status in Southwest, and it kind of crept up on me. I don't typically fly Southwest enough to make status, but apparently I have this year, and as near as I can tell, this means I won't have to pay the $12.50 early bird fee or be staring at my Southwest app exactly 24 hours before flight time in order to get a decent boarding position, which, as we all know, is critical on Southwest since there's no assigned seating. And an A or early B boarding group number is necessary for an aisle seat. And on my Vegas flight, you know, hitting the check-in button maybe 2 seconds after the 24-hour window got me, you know, position B7. So I got on a I got an aisle seat in the back half of the plane. It was a full flight, so after that, I was living last year's Super Bowl Doritos commercial, looking down, trying to avoid eye contact with potentially bad seatmates, while looking friendly to attract good ones. I'll post a link to the commercial in the show notes, but I got to tell you, it is spot on about living on about flying on Southwest. You know, in the last episode, we talked about travel amateurs clogging up the pre-check lanes. And these would be people getting pre-check as part of the TSA's managed inclusion program, where they sort of randomly shunt travelers over to pre-check to balance screening line loads. Now, this to the utter frustration of travelers who have paid the $85 for pre-check screening or people like myself, the $100 for global entry. Now, you might recall in the last episode, a longtime listener, Rich Frazier, was saying, you know, he was getting pre-check about 75% of the time. So, you know, why should he fork over the $85? But now the TSA says they're throttling back on managed inclusion, driven in at least in part by the publicity generated by auditors finding that, you know, travelers on various watch lists were being given pre-check as part of this program. I tell you, I've certainly noticed the length of pre-check lines dropping. Now, also in the last episode, I talked about luggage trends. Now, you know, one trend that sort of hit the cutting room floor from the last episode is kind of this move toward these fully rotating twirly wheels. Now, certainly, you know, it's handy in getting your luggage down a tight airplane aisle. But to my eyes, you know, most of them look a bit tinier, a bit flimsier than kind of the standard rollerblade style wheels that are partly embedded in the kind of in the back of the suitcase, and but only let you go in one direction. You know, the twirly wheels, I don't know, to me, they just don't seem rugged enough to survive getting pulled down Manhattan sidewalks or through some of the ruts in New Orleans. And to allow full rotation, that full spin, the wheels stick out of the bottom of the suitcase, making the bag longer. Now, this tripped up my wife on our flight from Edinburgh to London Heathrow, which was the first leg of our flight back from Scotland. The British Airways gate agent asked my wife to put her bag in the luggage sizer, and it would have fit except for the twirly wheels. So now we have to gate check it, which means standing off to the side of the gate, pulling some stuff out, transferring it into her shoulder bag. Now, it's understandable until we get on the plane and see that it's a half-empty 767, and there are fully empty luggage bins. I mean, really? Why did we just have to go through this? So, as is my wont, I vented my frustration on Twitter rather than to any BA employees. I don't know, call it passive aggressive, call it polite, I don't know. Anyhow, BA's social media department responded pretty quickly, saying that they needed to check all luggage to be fair to all passengers. But I don't know, how would allowing a bag that was at most maybe an inch over long because of the twirly wheels, allowing that on a half-full flight with empty overheads, how is that cheating any other passengers? I mean, I don't know, but it's just this sort of over-officiousness that just doesn't make any sense. And it's the reason I avoid, quite honestly, it's the reason I avoid BA now whenever possible, which is a real shame because back in the early 90s, when I was doing a lot of travel to Europe, I actually preferred British Airways. I sought them out, but that was 20 years ago, and it seems a very different BA. And actually, another key reason why I avoid BA, you know, officiousness and having to connect through Heathrow. Again, another thing I loved in the 90s that I now avoid whenever possible. Heathrow is a complete nightmare. I mean, you land, you trundle through all sorts of corridors, down escalators, into a bus, get a tour of the sort of Heathrow back alleys, stop at another terminal, fight through security again, and then end up in the midst of some packed retail space where you wander around through shops because there's no place to sit. I mean, it's gotten to the point that I'll fly the extra hour to connect through Frankfurt or Amsterdam, I mean, just to avoid Heathrow. Now, we were doing the St. Andrews trip on American Airlines award miles. I think I mentioned that in the last episode. Now, we were fine on the way out, O'Hare to JFK to Edinburgh, all on American Airlines. But coming back, it was Edinburgh, Heathrow, O'Hare with the first leg on British Airways. I mean, just Ugh. I keep thinking about how, you know, on how to get something out of the 300,000 BA Avios miles that I have. I don't know. Maybe I'll make my daughter fly BA. Now, on a brighter note, I actually tried a new financial service during this trip to Scotland, and it worked out real well. It's called Revolut, R-E-V-O-L-U-T, as in revolution, just cut a bit short. You know, it's a fintech startup based in the UK that gives you a virtual and real debit card with really, really great exchange rates. Now, as with all the, you know, cool startups nowadays, everything is done through a smartphone app, which to, you know, I don't know, just to stow the snark for a second, actually makes a lot of sense for, you know, for any travel app. I opened an account before I left, funded it with $200 from my regular ATM debit card. I could then convert my dollars to pounds or to euros at what appeared to be just about market rate. They didn't seem to be taking a lot of margin, you know, on either the buy side or the sell side. I also instantly had a virtual debit card with which I could use those new pounds or euros to buy things on the web, like a train ticket or top up a phone card. I then requested a physical version of my card, which took, I don't know, about a week to show up from the UK. Now I had a proper European chip and PIN card that I could use at an ATM or, say, the self-service checkout lane at Tesco's without waiting for the clerk to take my signed receipt. I mean, it only hiccuped once at the Costa coffee shop in St. Andrews, and I still don't know why. And then poking around a bit more, I found that I could send pounds to my daughter's Royal Bank of Scotland RBS account with only, you know, a day or so lag. Now, none of this functionality is necessarily new, though being able to do it all through a slick smartphone app is pretty handy. The real innovation, in my mind, is the cost. So funding my Revolut account for my debit card costs me less than 1%, so less than $2 for a $200 transfer, which, you know, if you think about it, is cheaper than most non-network ATM fees. After that, no transaction fees to move money between currencies or to withdraw. I mean, compare that to hitting a foreign ATM with your U.S. card. Now, my personal bank is very reasonable, only charging me Visa's, you know, 1% transaction fee. But actually, many big banks will hit you with, say, like a $5 non-network fee on top of any transaction fees. And then transferring money to my daughter's account, wire transfers can cost, you know, $25-$30. So Revolut has you know, well-packaged functionality delivered at the lowest costs that I've seen. I don't know how long they're going to be able to keep this price point, but right now, it's the best deal I've seen, you know, for money needed for international travel. I'll post a link in the show notes. And hey, if you have any thoughts, questions, a story, a comment, a travel tip, the voice of the traveler, send it along. The email address is comments, C-O-M-M-E-N-T-S, at travelcommons.com. You can always use your smartphone, like Linda Martin did, to record and send in an audio comment. Send a Twitter message to M. Peacock, or you can always post your thoughts on the Travel Commons Facebook page, like Linda Walls did, or go old school and post those thoughts on the website at travelcommons.com. So the only topic on today's Travel Commons podcast, if you could really call it a topic, is random thoughts about car rentals. I could have just continued in that stream of consciousness, just, you know, running straight off the Revolut card comment, like right into talking about car rentals, but I figured we all needed a break. So as I've mentioned in past episodes, I really don't like to rent cars. I much prefer to use rail or to cab in from the airport and then walk to wherever I need to go. Now, this works very well in New York or Chicago or San Francisco, worked well for me in New Orleans, but not so much in Denver or Detroit. So I've been renting a lot of cars over the past 6 months. So much, in fact, that Hertz bumped my status up to President Circle. Now, I'm not quite sure what that gets me, but it sounds statusy. Though right after the President Circle congratulatory email, I found a very dumpy Toyota Corolla in my Hertz Gold Spot. So I don't know, maybe it's nothing really special. But actually, it's in times like those when, you know, kind of when I get assigned the 45,000-mile Toyota with crumbs still in the driver's seat, or a Ford F-150 King Cab pickup truck in Boston. I mean, really? A pickup truck in Boston? But it's at those times that I've come to love Hertz Gold Choice. I mean, if you rent a midsize or above, and actually for our corporate rate, the price of a compact and the midsize are the same, so I always do a midsize, you can go to the choice aisle and take one of those cars instead. So, you know, in this case, I left the dumpy Toyota behind and took a brand new Nissan instead. Now, I've also started to make note of differences in service and attitude across locations. And again, kind of thinking about Hertz, I never rent from Hertz at Detroit Airport anymore. I mean, I've yet to get a non-dumpy car there. And I got to tell you, the attitude is not great. Though I do think Hertz's Newark station is absolutely the worst. I mean, just in a recent example, a colleague was driving his car toward the lot exit when a low tire pressure alarm lit up on the dashboard. So he asked the guy at the exit gate where he could get some air to top off the tire. Try a gas station, the attendant told him. That was really helpful. Now, I've had challenges with car rental websites, Hertz, Avis, when my pickup or drop-off time didn't match the hours of the Hertz or Avis office that I had selected. I'd get an error notice, and then when I go back to try another, you know, site or another time, the websites have randomly sort of selected another date or another location. I had this happen to me in Edinburgh on the second car we rented. We were taking the train from Lockerbie back to Edinburgh, where we had been doing a 4 days of biking while our daughter was going through freshman orientation. And I'd booked a car on Hertz's website to pick up at the train station and drop off at Edinburgh 5 days later. It took me five tries to get it right. I mean, each time I restarted, the website reset the pickup location from Waverley Station to Edinburgh Airport, and each time I'd have to correct it. Except it seems the last time I just missed it. And so when we arrived in Waverley, there was no train. And I looked at the reservation, pick up at Edinburgh Airport. It's like, oh man, not the end of the world. I mean, we could have taken, actually, there's a new light rail, a new tram that would go from Waverley out to Edinburgh Airport. I guess it would have given me the opportunity to try yet another rails to airport path, which, as we all know, is a big thing here in Travel Commons. But I got to tell you, it wasn't in the plans, and so it was aggravating. I searched through the hertz.co.uk website for a phone number, that itself being a little extra helping of aggravation, and called the reservation center. I have to tell you, the woman on the other end of that phone was inordinately calm and helpful and just sort of immediately took me from being really hacked off and frustrated to at least being constructive. 3 minutes later, she'd moved my pickup to Waverley. I thanked her a lot. I guess I should have booked with her instead of the website. And we rented our first car in Edinburgh from Enterprise. I mean, it was a great car, a Fiat 500L. All the bags fit, you know, nicely in the hatchback. It had a great nav, nice sound system. It was clean, low mileage. So we drove to a nearby shopping mall maybe an hour after we had landed, grabbed a coffee at Starbucks, key. And also, we grabbed phone sims at the EE store. So now we're all set. At least I'm caffeinated, because driving a manual driving a stick on the left-hand side of the road takes a little bit of attention for me. The next stop was to IKEA to buy things that we didn't pack, like towels and hangers. And so coming off the motorway through a traffic circle, the clutch completely crapped out. I'd put it in gear, let out the clutch pedal, nothing. 3 hours later, after Enterprise, the Auto Club, and Fiat sort of scrummed about who was going to, who was supposed to come pick up the car, the tow truck showed up, loaded it up, dropped us back at Edinburgh Airport, where I got to say the Enterprise folks just apologized profusely and gave us an even nicer Nissan. Now, a couple of weeks later, I noticed the Pope used a Fiat 500L to drive from Andrews Air Force Base outside of D.C. to the Vatican Embassy. The next day, though, if you notice, he was in a Jeep Popemobile. I think I know what happened. I can sympathize. Okay, that's it. That's the end of Travel Commons podcast number 117. I hope you all enjoyed the show, and I hope you decide to stay subscribed. Hopefully in the next episode, I will have something a little bit more structured like all the last episodes, a little less random walk. Anyhow, check out the show notes for the music links and the other links, say, to, you know, places like Revolut and into the Doritos commercial. You'll find them all on the website at travelcommons.com. As always, you can find the Travel Commons podcast and subscribe to it through SoundCloud, Stitcher, iTunes. And always, if you have a story, thought, comment, gripe, the voice of the traveler, send them along, text or audio file to comments, COMMENTS at travelcommons.com, mpeacock on Twitter, the Travel Commons page on Facebook, or at the website. You know, kind of when you've stopped off looking for links on the website at travelcommons.com. Thanks to everyone who has taken the time for emails, tweets, and to post comments. You help me immensely. Until we talk again, take care, and thanks for stopping by the Travel Commons. Bye now.
Life is hell, strange bed in a lonely motel. But one thing needs my mind, the warm woman that I left behind. From California to Carolina, she calls me up and there's nothing finer. And when the tears start falling, crying and